Hey, college football fans, Joel Klatt here. And over on my podcast, The Joel Klatt Show, we discuss the best teams, players, and storylines in all of college football. Any questions? Then send them in to the Joel Klatt Show mailbag, and I'll answer them. Tap the banner to follow The Joel Klatt Show on Spotify.
Hey, y'all. Uncle Jimmy here. When you speak for yourself, you're forced to think for yourself. And when you think for yourself, the sports world looks different. In order to enjoy this podcast and this show, you need to have the courage to look at the world from alternative points of view and not be offended when you disagree. Speak for Yourself isn't your Twitter, Facebook, or Instagram feed. SFY tells you what you need to hear and not what you want to hear. So, welcome aboard, buckle up, and enjoy the ride.
We start today with the NFL. Despite numerous efforts, Hollywood has never made a good movie about clones. I walked out of Jurassic World midway through embarrassed that I had wasted my time and money. Critics panned Star Wars Episode II, Attack of the Clones. Arnold Schwarzenegger couldn't save the sixth day. Last year, Keanu Reeves got trashed for starring in Replicas. Cloning is very hard. The greatest show in the history of television, the NFL, is trying its hand at cloning this fall. It's not going that well. This past offseason, NFL ownership cloned Rams coach Sean McVay, hiring every fair-haired, blue-eyed, 30-something coach it could find. The Bengals grabbed Zach Taylor. The Cardinals tabbed Cliff Kingsbury. The Packers anointed Matt LaFleur. The friends of Sean McVay were in high demand. A month into the NFL season, this looks like a remake of Replicas, and Zach Taylor and Cliff Kingsbury are in a fistfight to beat Keanu Reeves. Both coaches are winless. The Pittsburgh Steelers, using unproven backup quarterback Mason Rudolph, pummeled Taylor's Bengals on Monday Night Football last night, 27-3. The Bengals looked every bit as inept as Kingsbury's Cardinals did on Sunday when they fell to 0-3-1 after being abused 27-10 by the Seahawks. The success story of the McVay clones is LaFleur, who has led Green Bay to a 3-1 start. But is LaFleur really a success? McVay is an offensive innovator. The McVay clones were hired to improve and fix offenses. Like all the other McVay clones, LaFleur's offense has struggled, particularly in the second half when defenses adjust. The Packers are averaging 5 points per game after halftime. Let's take a look at all the McVay clones and their offenses. LaFleur, who has the advantage of calling plays for Aaron Rodgers, is tops in points and yards per game at 21.3 points and 337 yards, which rank 17th and 20th in the league. Kingsbury and Taylor rank 25th and 30th in points per game and 23rd and 27th in yards. I bring all this up to say that McVay mania was misguided. Sean McVay is a good coach and may one day prove himself to be a great coach. He hasn't done it yet. Bill Belichick and Sean Payton remain the gold standard in football coaching. The rush to anoint kids to coach kids is a mistake. The young guys who are ready to take on that level of responsibility is a tiny, tiny group. Zach Taylor is going to make Cincinnati long for the days of Marvin Lewis. Hell, McVay is having problems in Los Angeles. The Rams gave up 55 points to the Buccaneers, and quarterback Jared Goff is regressing.
I'm not going to sit up here and continue to make excuses for why I haven't done a good enough job. I'm not doing it right now. We're not getting it done, and we're just going to continue to put our head down and try to find solutions.
All right, McVay is talking directly about Goff's regression and the decision to throw the ball 68 times on Sunday. That's the ego of a head coach getting in the way of doing the right thing. It's hard for any successful person to control his or her ego. It's even harder for young people. All right, joining the desk now are Fox Sports NFL analyst Eric Mangini, Fox Sports college football analyst and Super Bowl champion Reggie Bush. Marcellus, start us off. Is Sean McVay more hype than substance?
More hype than substance.
The hype's been tremendous.
Golly, man, this dude is so much substance. It's just insane right now. And to go to a Super Bowl and lose one game this year, this is where we are? This is where we land?
There could be plenty of substance, but that doesn't mean it exceeds the hype.
Oh, man, I don't know how much hype he's getting, but he is outshining that hype with his substance. Let me give you some numbers. First of all, this guy. And we know how difficult it is to be a coach in the NFL. I hope we do. It's not just about your talent as a coach, but the terrain in which exists as you coach through the rigors of the game. Top 10 all-time in terms of win percentage out the gate. His 35-plus games, he's coached 36 games. 27-9 record. Of the top 10, five of those coaches are Hall of Famers, just to let you know the company he's keeping right
35 games in.
Hey, man, you can only measure him by what he got. And what he has is those 35, 36 games. I'm talking about guys like John Madden, Vince Lombardi. And now we're getting into the indictment of his coaching tree or his relationship tree based on who he is and trying to use that to undermine how great Sean McVay is. Remember, respect to our own Jeff Fisher. That was a 4-12 bunch that was in the Super Bowl a couple of years later. Mm-hmm. I don't care what level of hype, mm-hmm. Reggie, mm-hmm. the substance has trumped that.
Yeah. Yeah, and I agree with you because before McVay got to the Rams,
Lord,
they were terrible. Let's be honest, they weren't that good. And McVay has done a masterful job with the pieces that he has. And I really think he's done a great job. Obviously, throwing the football 68 times a game points to a big reason why they lost the game, because this team is built off play action, right? And you have one of the best running backs in the NFL, and yet at the same time, you only give them the ball five times, right? And so I think, again, you got to get back to running the football with Todd Gurley, because that is the foundation of what your offense is built off of. That's how you got to the Super Bowl. That's how you've had a lot of success. And I think Sean McVay is a great coach. He's so good, he's gotten other coaches his age with less experience hired.
You're
that's how good he
is. Point that ain't for me.
That's hype. But
No.
That's hype for the other coaches. For him, their substance. Whatever the other coaches do, this on
Eric jumps in here. A guy makes it to one Super Bowl, and the entire NFL loses its mind and goes out and hires four guys to be just like him.
It's a copycat league.
We've never seen that. We've never seen that. That's what I'm talking about, the level of hype. That's not saying there's no substance there, but the hype has been
incredible.
You're
saying the hype train around him when it comes to other coaches?
Yeah, that's part of the hype. The fact that everybody felt like, oh, I got to get me a Sean McVay.
I agree.
I've never seen that.
Mm. Well, look, to judge Sean McVay off of 2 years is wrong, okay? And to judge the coaches from his tree after four games is even more wrong. Mm-hmm. When you look at Chuck Noll.
I know a lot of wrong things.
Hold on a second. When you look at when you look at Chuck Noll, it took him 4 years to get to 500. It took Tom Landry 6 years to get to 500. Bill Belichick had one winning season in his first,
six years
as a head coach.
Yeah.
And now he's the gold standard. Yeah. You can't judge him out of the gate. It takes time. Yep. For things to show themselves and to make a legitimate evaluation. We want to rush to judgment on players, on coaches, on everything. Mm-hmm. We want to cook a turkey, but you want it cooked in a microwave.
Yeah.
That's not how it works. You've got to let it play out and see where these guys land. And when you do that, then you get a realistic picture. How good were you when you did your first show?
Ooh, I saw it.
But right on down the line, how good were you when you first started college? How good were you when you did something the first time? Whatever it may be, you learn, you grow, you get experience, and that is a more of an indication of how you handle the experience you get as opposed to how you are when you start out the game. Yeah.
All right, so my point, again, I think goes unscathed here by any of you all's argument.
Oh, it's scathed.
Just scathed.
He's the microwave coach, Sean McVay. And he got all the high. Oh, he fixed things immediately when he got to Los Angeles.
Which he did. Facts.
Again, he did. Nice job. Once. Again.
What you know, Cam Newton, only one time to fix it.
Cam Newton won an MVP once.
Oh, don't
again,
do that.
You have greatness is determined by over and over and over again. Yeah. And again, it's just like Eric said. It took a while for Bill Belichick to establish himself as the gold standard. Yeah. We immediately threw this dude in the microwave, made him the gold standard, and then let's go out and get three other guys and that look just like him and make him coaches. And so I can sit back. If the gold standard is, hey, he fixed things immediately, how come I can't look at Zach Taylor and the rest of these clowns, Cliff Kingsbury, and say, fix it immediately. You're supposed to be a microwave coach just like Sean McVay.
LaFleur is out there winning. Don't do that.
But exactly. LaFleur is out there winning.
Thanks to Mike Patton, but go ahead.
He's got Aaron Rodgers. But yeah. Sean Payton started off as a rookie head coach. My rookie year, we went to the NFC Championship game. The next 2 years, we were like 7-9, 8-8. Mm. The fourth year is when we won the Super Bowl. So to your point, Coach, it does take time to get there. And now when you think about the Saints – You don't think about the ain'ts anymore before we got there. You don't think about the fans who would come to the games with trash bags over their head. Now you think about a legit football organization that the Cowboys just found out the hard way that you got to play for 60
minutes. And one of the biggest problems they had was the defense. You've got Wade Phillips, who's about as veteran a coach as you can possibly get. Vic Fangio, he's an older coach with a lot of experience, and he's struggling in his situation. So to just jump out and rush to judgment on any of these things, it's what makes the established coaches and organizations thrive every year, because there's turnover of coaches, and when there's turnover of coaches, there's mistakes made with personnel. That's why Wes Welker gets traded to the Patriots. That's why things like that happen, is because everybody just wants the quick fix instead of letting it play out and actually trying to build something with meaning and substance that can compete for a championship every
year. And just like y'all have said, Bill Belichick, Sean Payton, who I believe are the gold standards of coaching right now in the football, in the NFL, it took time for them to get anointed and to be put in that position. It took one little trip to the Super Bowl, and a trip to the Super Bowl is tremendous, for this guy to get anointed, and then now we got to hire everybody just like him. Why not go out and hire Belichick?
Hold on. Today's environment, Bill Belichick wouldn't last as a head coach. He wouldn't have had the opportunities that he's had. It took Robert Kraft real strength of character to go out and say, I want that guy. Not only do I want that guy, I'm going to trade a first-round draft pick. He doesn't get enough credit for the chance that he took on a guy that a lot of people, especially the media, had said he is absolutely horrible. I was in Cleveland when he was the head coach. I know what that environment was like. I was there when we got to the Patriots. There wasn't a person in New England that was happy we showed up in that building.
Now, and Tom,
unhyped. Those guys were unhyped and had to earn it.
Okay, we've been throwing Belichick around a lot, so I got to go here. And time is not always telling. Sometimes you can rush to judgment. Sometimes you can wait and still get to the same result. So let's talk about Bill Belichick, the great, and his coaching tree. And in respect to Coach Mangini, who's a part of that. Let's talk about how that's worked out. Romeo Crennel, Josh McDaniels, Eric Mangini, my man, respect. Bill O'Brien, Jim Schwartz, Matt Patricia, Brian Flores. Look, you can wait for Bill Belichick's been to 9 Super Bowls as a head coach. And you can wait and say all these guys are going to be put in the best position for success. But of all those names and everyone in this coaching tree, only one has over a 500 win percentage, and that's Bill O'Brien. So the point of this is, you got to understand that you can't indict these guys because it happened so fast. Because when you see it slow play, you still have to look at it and say, it is an impossible task to just think that you're going to have osmosis and great coaching. It's a difficult task.
Well, again, all these guys that shook hands with Sean McVay, more power to them. They got these jobs, and I guess y'all good with it. I'm not. Again,
you weren't good with everyone that got a job because of Belichick relationship?
I'm going to be honest with you. I feel like they earned it. They were a part of something super successful and had proven themselves and earned the opportunities to go out and get Cliff Kingsbury out of Texas Tech because he's got the same hairstyle and was friends.
But is that on Sean McVay that we go to the same groomer?
Well, again, that's part of the hype, and I'm just pushing back against it and saying all the – and look, Sean McVay, John Madden was the youngest coach at one point, and sometimes you can find that super young coach that can do it. But it's just –
You mean the same guy who had the same win percentages?
It's the same – it's a tiny, tiny group. You're better off going with experience.
But head coaches are a little bit like quarterbacks. There's so much turnover at the position. Yeah. The volume of head coaches are in the ones that have longevity. Usually they're tied into a really successful quarterback. But those numbers are those numbers. And it's the same thing with long-term quarterbacks. That doesn't mean that you stop drafting quarterbacks. That doesn't mean that you don't look at successful programs or things that have worked in the past to try to make good decisions. It's an imperfect science when you're dealing with human beings and how they're going to react in situations.
I'd rather look at Sean Payton than Sean McVay is all I'm saying. And Sean McVay may go on to be the next Belichick. Who knows? May go on to be the next Sean Payton. Who knows? But I'd rather be looking at these experienced guys, even a Mike Tomlin, that had done it year after year after year. In Cincinnati, they thought, oh, we're going to get this young kid, and he looks like Sean McVay.
But wait, but I look at Sean Payton when we look at Bill Belichick, and it still doesn't promise you results when it branches off.
No.
And some people would argue that Sean Payton's underachieved having Drew Brees and only winning one Super Bowl. I mean, there's an argument that when you have a Hall of Fame player in that position to only win one Super Bowl is a little bit of underachieving as opposed to overachieving.
And that Bounty Gate didn't help. You
cheating.
Hold on now.
You went in the room.
You just said something
I wanted to respond to.
I got a lot. What you want to do?
What you just said, I wanted to respond to him. You made me forget it.
But hold on. How about this? How about the fact that you have to respect the marathon, the terrain? By record, half of these coaches will fail. And by results, technically all but one every single year have to go back to the drawing board because they didn't win it all, including the Sean McVay, who's had an 11-5 record, a 13-3 record, and now it's 3-1, and he's hyped.
Here's my issue, my bottom line, and we didn't get to cover it all, but this whole thing of, hey, let's go out and get an offensive genius coach who's in his 30s and he can relate to these young guys in the locker room, it's all garbage to me.
Oh.
Bill Belichick is a defensive genius who partnered with a quarterback and turned him into a genius. Go out and give some of these defensive coaches a chance.
Yeah.
Give some of these
the older ones like Vic Fangio.
How about give some people some time? Give some people some time in order to see what it can become, as opposed to after year one. Oh, it's not working. You're fired. I mean, it's silly.
Eric, you know how I got this job? By being ahead of the conversation. Same way a defensive coordinator rises by saying, you know what, I think I know what they're going to do on the next play, and I'm going to do this. That's how you elevate. I'm just trying to be, I don't think this little kiddie corpse of Sean McVay lookalikes and clones, I don't think it's going to work.
That ain't how that's you got a job. You got it because they want another like a Wilbon. They said, who else look like Wilbon?
Right.
Go get him. You look lookalike too.
And you're a lot better now than you were early on, right?
Not true.
You were great right out of the gate?
I was good out of the gate. Reggie Bush and Eric Mangini are back. Time now for a big story. Let's move to Dallas. Where the Cowboys are regrouping after a disappointing loss to the Saints on Sunday night. The Cowboys have one of the most explosive offenses in the league, but the Saints held them to just 10 points. And after the game, Jerry Jones had some interesting comments about how New Orleans got the win.
Obviously, we're very disappointed. Let's give them some credit. Their defense was... frankly, was the biggest concern for me coming in this thing was how they would defense us, and they did a great job. I give them their due. They won a hard-fought game, but they won it with a good scheme, good coaching.
All right, the key words there at the end, good scheme and good coaching. I think that sounds like a little pot shot at Jason Garrett. Do you think that Jerry, if things went poorly, you think you could fire Jason Garrett midseason?
Midseason, no, not at all. No one could tell me right now that's how this movie is going to end. If you think about it, they were rolling before this game. Again, they only lost by two on the road in the Superdome to the New Orleans Saints.
It was a big loss, though. You know, Drew Brees wasn't playing.
They still paying you, Reggie? Damn.
I'm just saying, like, can we talk about the facts?
It is. But are we really going to, like, be caught off guard and think that it's profound to hear Jerry Jones say that Sean Payton is a better coach than Jason Garrett? Like, is that what we're going to now use to start some smoke? Like, oh, he got out coached. I think that's going to happen. I think you walk into that situation saying schematically, maybe we don't have the edge. By coaching, maybe we don't have the edge on the sideline, but we still have a great team. So you don't abort mission now.
Yeah.
The only time that Jerry fires someone midseason, let's go back to it. When it was Wade Phillips. After an 11-5 season, Super Bowl aspirations, they start off 1-7, not 3-1. So, no, I don't see this movie ending that way.
Yeah, I think Jerry Jones is one of the most loyal coaches. I don't think he's going to fire
owners.
I don't think he's going to fire Jason Garrett halfway through the season. But I have a question, though.
Mm-mm.
Because I don't feel like we saw anything, Lou. Like, everybody in the world knows the recipe to stopping the Cowboys is stopping Zeke. Everybody knows that. That's nothing new. This isn't groundbreaking evidence. Like, we already knew that. And so my question is, again, how do we... I'm sorry, I'm losing my point right now.
You're talking about the Saints. Sorry. That money talking. He's like, what did the owners tell me to say for the Saints?
Here's what I'll say. So yesterday, watching on TV, I thought
there's a lot of post safety defense. They were going to get eight in the block, box to stop Zeke, and then they were going to play man-to-man, and that Dallas didn't have an answer to the tight man-to-man. I went and watched the coaches' tape today. You know what happened? Is Dallas's number one draft picks on the O-line got beat up by New Orleans' number one draft picks on the D-line. Mm-hmm. Ezekiel Elliott, there were seven-man boxes. They were playing cover two, and Zeke was getting held to minus one, yeah. plus two, plus three. They straight up got beat up up front on the O-line. Mm. And it wasn't a function of coaching. It wasn't a function of the plays that were being called. It was their X beat that O. Now, the other thing is, Dak did miss a couple open guys. That happened. There were some drops. Across the board, New Orleans was better emotionally prepared to play this game as opposed to a scheme aspect. I watched Dak check to a run against a split safety defense, which is exactly what you'd want. Zeke needs to hold up his end of the bargain, too. He needs to be able to produce something against a seven-man box. And then you look at their defense. New Orleans held the ball for 12 more minutes than Dallas. That's not just scheme. Possession. That's about my guys are going to beat up your guys today, regardless of what's being called.
What you just said is powerful from a coaching perspective. Jerry sits in the owner's box and has a completely different view. And this is where I think y'all are wrong in terms of, I do think if he does, if the results that he's looking for aren't there and he gets the middle of the season, I do think he would make a move on Jason Garrett. And it's because Jerry wants what he feels like he's paid for and is paying for. Mm-hmm. He wants a Super Bowl this year. He feels like he's built a Super Bowl team. He wants it this year, not next year. He doesn't want to come close this year. He wants to be playing in the Super Bowl this year because that's what he feels like he's paid for. He is not happy conceding, oh, they got a better coach than me. No, Jerry's a billionaire, and, oh, you got something better than me? I'm going to go buy something better than you.
Yeah. And he paid the offensive lineman, right? Go block those defensive linemen. Exactly. He paid Zeke. Go get the you're the elite running back. Go make the yards against split safety defense. You're right. He deserves what he paid for. He's paid those guys. They need to go play when it's not a function of being out X and O. And on the firing standpoint, there's nobody left to fire there. They fired everybody across the board except for the head coach. Who are they going to replace him with?
That defensive coordinator who's going to be a hot commodity.
What, you mean a young, inexperienced defensive coordinator? Well, I thought you didn't like young guys.
I'm not Jerry Jones, and neither are you, and I'm speaking from what I believe Jerry Jones' perspective is.
No.
And so Jerry Jones, again, he may go look at the tape and go look at his offensive lineman getting their butt kicked, but the question the head coach is going, how come we weren't prepared better? How come we weren't prepared for this atmosphere and environment? It's not our first rodeo shine. Jason, you've been here as a head coach. This isn't your first time playing in the Superdome. We weren't prepared. That's Jerry's mindset.
So what I wanted to push back on before I lost my point earlier in the show was, how come they weren't adjusting, right? When you figured out certain things were not working, right? And this is where I feel like the inexperience of Kellen Moore maybe plays a part in this, because find a way to get Zeke the ball other ways. Maybe some screens. Let's get him out wide. Let's find ways to get him the ball in space. Because when you see a defense that's having a lot of success, right, and it's slowing down your offense and it's slowing down Dak, let's find ways to adjust, because the greatest coaches find ways to adjust at halftime.
Not if they're not blocking, though.
Any point in the game, yes, you can. If the offensive line is not blocking well, not protecting that quarterback, let's find a different way. This is not working out for us today. Let's find a different way to get to that.
Well, for me, I'm staying narrowly focused on this question. You're not going to make Jason Garrett your ex when you don't know who's your next. And there's no one out there looking more attractive than Jason
Chris
Garrett.
Chris Richard.
Chris.
No, I'm telling you.
I'm not taking a shot. I'm not taking a shot. But one, you have to also understand the managing of these personalities and this team, the mental makeup of the Dallas Cowboys. That's something that we never give credit to for a coach, but that's something that is a part of what Jason Garrett is doing wonderfully with this squad. You got to think about what could be discipline issues, what could be emotional letdowns in critical moments. This team is rising. This team is climbing. Is it at the pace of Jerry Jones? No. But then perfect is the enemy of good. You're going to get rid of a good coach and get what? Because Sean Payton, who you had your eye on, just signed an extension. He's not going anywhere. So who is the other Sean Payton?
Sean Payton's the perfect example. Sean Payton made his bones in Dallas, and he got away and became the second best coach in the NFL. If Jerry Jones reaches the conclusion, like, oh, this young defensive coordinator I got is a hot commodity around the league, he might be the next Sean Payton, I think Jerry Jones is willing to, you know, roll the dice with this young guy because Sean Payton got away. And I just look at this team. They weren't prepared for that environment. Tony Dungy said it before the game. He said the crowd noise was going to be a problem, and it was going to affect their offensive line play. And I kind of rolled my eyes. I'm sure, Reggie, you didn't because you played in the Superdome many times.
I was at the game.
Yeah, and I'm sure, Eric, you understand that I do think that hurt the communication of their offensive line, and the offensive line did play poorly. But I think in Jerry's mind, that's on Jason Garrett.
Well, here's what I'll say. The last time that he had a hot young candidate that he had to keep around, it was Jason Garrett. He paid Jason Garrett a ton of money to remain as the offensive coordinator, and eventually he transitioned to it. In terms of making a decision during the season, let's say you do make the defensive coordinator the guy. Now it hurts your defense because he's not coordinating the defense full-time.
Mm-hmm.
So you have I understand that, but we know how the dynamic is now. So why, well, first of all, we're overreacting to one game.
They lost by 2 points.
They lost by 2 points. But to make that decision, things have to be really, really bad for to transition.
I don't think they have to be really bad because I don't think Jerry's expectations have ever been higher. Other than going back to the days of Jimmy Johnson, Jerry Jones feels I've bought and paid for, drafted, and produced a Super Bowl team. He's going to blame somebody if it doesn't come to fruition. And his quarterback took a big step back this past week, and he ain't blaming the quarterback.
And how about this? This is a balancing act of rationale in this building because of Stephen Jones. Whether you've seen it work yourself out on draft day, you've seen it in the roster construction, you've seen it in some of the payouts to the players. There is a balancing act of respect that Jerry has for his son. So hopefully that prevails in this moment. Well, get rid of Jason Garrett. Hopefully.
Well, look, the coach is always going to lose in that scenario because the owner's the GM. Yeah. He's not firing himself, so, you know, there's only one way to go.
The owner and the GM have done an amazing job. I think everybody would have
to. The owner is the GM.
I know. Both he's done both jobs very, very well. Reggie Bush is back. We're joined now by Fox NFL analyst LeVar Arrington. Let's move to the Panthers. We got another win without Cam Newton this week. A lot of credit has gone to backup quarterback Kyle Allen, there's no question that Christian McCaffrey has been carrying the load for Carolina. McCaffrey continues to build on last year's breakout season, where he emerged as a major threat running as well as receiving. And he now leads the NFL in yards from scrimmage, rushing yards, rushing attempts, and is near the top in rushing touchdowns. Easy question here, but it's kind of interesting because he's white, to be quite honest. Woo. Is Christian McCaffrey the best running back in football?
Before I answer this, I just think that this is a great coincidence that Saquon Barkley misses 1 week, and all of a sudden, this is the conversation right now. Don't you catch that? Like, if Barkley was still playing, would we be having this conversation?
Well, if Barkley was leading the league in rushing and yards from scrimmage.
Missing a game and a half, it's going to be difficult to do that in the only four-game stretch. But with that said, Saquon Barkley's the best running back in football right now. However, he's injured, and that's a part of it. Your greatest ability is availability. Since he's not there, I'm going with your boy. I'm going with Christian McCaffrey, and I'll tell you why. Judging a book by its cover will always make you pause. And I think what we're getting caught up in is what you said. Why we just can't give this guy his proper due and his credit is simply because of the paint job. It's just as simple as that. It's as simple as us really looking at someone defying stereotype. But if you look at him, not only in his durability, his biggest question mark coming out was, is he a three-down back? Is he? He is toting the rock any and every way you need him to. So for me, it's a simple answer, but in part, caveat, it's because Saquon Barkley's not out there.
Well, I got a chance to get to know Christian McCaffrey when he was really young. I'll tell you a quick story. I'll try to make it as quick as possible. Me and my wife were in Miami on vacation, and we're staying at a hotel. We go to the gym to get a workout in. I see these three white kids in there getting it, going hard. And so I'm working out, and we end up talking. And he's like, yeah, I'm going to Stanford, you know, on a full ride scholarship. I'm going to play running back. I was like, oh, you're going to play running back? Okay, well, good luck. And then his brothers were standing there, and we started talking. And so they're telling me their last name. They're from Denver. I'm like, your dad wouldn't happen to be, you know, McCaffrey. And they was like, yeah, that's our dad.
Yeah.
And so what I took away from that experience was that One, they were on spring break. Him and his two brothers were on spring break in the gym going hard. Mm. And I saw his character on full display when he was really young. And so to me, to see this now, what he's doing right now, only makes sense because he's been knocking on that door for the last 2 years about, and he can do a lot of different things. That's what I love about him. He's not just a running back. He can play receiver. He can line up in the slot. He can kill the linebackers with an option route. He can do all those things. And so I do think he's the best running back in college.
Better than Saquon? If he, yes or no?
Thank you. I love you. I'm gonna get to that.
We got you.
I think, and I made mention of it yesterday. I think Christian McCaffrey is the best running back in the National Football League right now. The stats confirm from the stats standpoint of it, but I was alluding to it yesterday when we were talking about the speech that Cam had about himself not going out there at his full potential is. Christian McCaffrey is a running back that gives that franchise hope for the future. You can build around that quarterback. As much as I love Saquon, we are. They're not talking about building the team around Saquon Barkley as it stands right now in New York. They're trying to figure out what they're going to do at the quarterback's position.
That's the reason.
When you have a guy, but the reality of it is if you have established yourself as the best guy in the league, then you're talking about building that team around that guy. And I can guarantee you those are the discussions that are taking place in Charlotte right
now. Lower expectations, but I hear you.
Here would be my pushback on Saquon Barkley, and I want to just, before I say this, Barry Sanders to me was the most exciting, most talented running back I've ever seen.
Ever. Mm-hmm.
But he was not the best running back during his time. I would have rather had Emmitt Smith. I would have rather had Emmitt Smith because again, the home run hitters, and I love Barry Sanders, home run hitter, but there's also a lot of tackles for loss that go along with those Barry, guys that put you in second and long, third and long, which look, Barry Sanders just, he didn't win. Mm-hmm. And again, there was a lot of reasons why in Detroit and the coach and never having the right quarterback. The thing that separates Christian McCaffrey right now He didn't have the right quarterback.
What about the line? What about his?
I said that there's a bunch of other reasons.
The best line in history.
I get it.
My goodness.
Emmitt led the league in rushing career-wise, still has a right. I'm just telling you what. That's my thought.
That's my dog.
But I'm going to just say this about Saquon Barkley. When he was there, he was not the reason the Giants are winning.
Yep.
Daniel Jones is the reason right now the Giants are winning.
That's true.
When it comes to the Carolina Panthers, we can talk about Kyle Allen, we can talk about Cam Newton. The reason Carolina's won two straight is because of Christian McCaffrey and what he's bringing to the table. To me, being that engine that drives winning, being the guy that's leading the league in yards from scrimmage, Saquon Barkley, nice home run hitter. But to me, I put Alvin Kamara ahead of Saquon.
Oh, can I object, Your Honor? Oh. Can I say this? That Christian McCaffrey was on the field when they were losing the first two games.
Yeah, I know, and so was Cam.
And then all they did was switch quarterback. And then, so Kyle Allen needs some credit. Get that boy some credit, Kyle Allen. Respect
you.
Gotta
get a quarterback.
And look.
I'm not taking it away, but Alvin Kamara, he's the reason why New Orleans is winning right now.
This is not a shot at anybody who we're leaving off this list or saying is right below Christian McCaffrey, Saquon. I will say this. We're talking about, in this question, why isn't he getting his due? And is he the one? Because he's the best running back in football, of question. I will go along with that. But he is defying what people don't expect, and I think that that's why people
that elevates
are slow. It should elevate. It does for me, but it's slow. It's slow for other people.
And again, I want to apologize for Ezekiel Elliott for not mentioning his name sooner. That would be the other. Yeah. To me, it's Zeke, it's Alvin Kamara, and Christian McCaffrey at the top. I love Saquon. Great home run hitter. His highlights are great on red zone. But
he was playing with the ashes of Eli Manning. Can you not
tackle for loss? He's multi-dimensional, too, though. He can catch the ball out of the backfield.
He had the same issues at Penn State, though, in terms of being a home run hitter. Home run hitter, not the guy.
That's as complete a back as you're going to get. I mean, I'm just telling you, if God made a guy to play running back, he built Saquon Barkley. That's what would be
it. I got to see it, though.
I don't know what you're looking for or what you're looking at.
Long, sir, want to apologize to Barry Sanders. These guys are
picking
up over my
head. You've been letting them have it. Come on,
I went and checked my archives of what I wrote at the time, and I'm not sure it would stand the test of time. All right.
That's a big man.
Wiley.
Right, that's a big dude.
LeVar Arrington is back with us. Time now for Darnell's question of the day. Darnell, take it away.
Sir, let's move to the Browns. We got a huge win in Baltimore over the weekend. We're still up in arms about Odell Beckham Jr. appearing to be choked by Ravens Marlon Humphrey. The Ravens actually put out another angle showing Humphrey was just grabbing Odell's jersey, not before Browns coach Freddie Kitchens complained about their legs choke. Check this out.
I don't like seeing our player on the field and somebody's hands around his throat. I don't like that. I don't think that needs to be in our game. And I would be the first to say that if it was our guy doing it. And I want everybody held to the same standard. That's all I want.
Does Kitchens have a legitimate gripe?
No. And I said this at the time before the Ravens released the other video. That is standard operating procedure when a DB and a wide receiver get in a little scrap on the field. If they were standing up, even if the hands was around the throat, no one would even care. OBJ wasn't even complaining about this. What this really comes down to is Freddie Kitchens like, damn, we just won a game and Odell got two catches.
Oh.
He gonna be mad at me. Let me do something and cape up for Odell so that Odell don't come here talking crazy to me today. And so it's a distraction technique by Freddie Kitchens.
Uh-oh.
Because he knows Odell's hot. We just scored 40 points and I got two catches.
Two catches and one lost earring. That's what Odell said after the game. He wasn't even tripping on getting choked, which he wasn't. The video shows that. I thought he was at first. But Odell, let go of his face mask.
Thank you. Come on now.
I mean, what's fighting?
Let's go to church. Let's go to church. That is the most disrespectful thing an offensive player can do outside of spitting, which we've heard of spitting taking place.
Yeah.
But the only other thing that really can make me feel like I'm going to get you. Like, we're going to throw down on this. Let my face mask go, man.
Yeah, real talk.
That's fighting words.
Right there.
That's fighting
that
words.
That grip, that's the death grip.
That's
when somebody
words.
Got you like this, one, you mess with my head, my neck, you got me in control.
Yeah.
I can't get up off you. One, two, when I do get off you, I'm coming back.
Yeah.
Because you had me in this grip. Odell knows that. So in this situation, look how the Ravens defenders' hands are closed. Yeah. I'm not choking you with closed hands.
But he flopped. Odell flopped.
Crazy.
Why he's holding his face mask? He's flopping. So in other words, you can yield more damage to that defender in that flop holding his face mask.
Holding it.
Then you sitting there accusing him of getting choked out. Like, the reality here is that was one of the most disrespectful things and sneaky, dirty things that Odell Beckham did.
And that's why the guy is contemplating choking you out.
I might
be like, you got me by the muzzle right here?
Yes.
Oh, we got problems, bro. Yes.
This, to me, goes back to my concern about Freddie Kitchens, an inexperienced first-time head coach, doing too much. Y'all just won. Y'all just reestablish yourself as a threat in the AFC North. Don't embrace fear like, oh, my God, I know Odell. Let me get out in front of Odell being hot. Let me caper. And again, I put some of this blame on Odell because Odell has gone into every NFL weekend trying to be a victim. Oh, they mad because I'm wearing a watch. Oh, my visor's not right. They're always attacking me. And so Freddie Kitchens followed his lead. Let me make Odell a victim again. This will make Odell happy. But he's a rookie. He's doing too much. It didn't happen. Even if it did happen, there's no NFL player that wouldn't understand, like, you grab me by the face mask, I'm going to grab you by the neck or whatever. I've seen this from Deion Sanders slap fighting with Andre Rison
right.
to the beginning of time. This is what DBs and receivers do, little or nothing of really throwing real blows. And Freddie Kitchens out here doing too much.
The worst thing you could do as a coach is when you see something that is of distraction or not in your focus of what it takes to win a football game and give that life. That's the worst thing you can do because all of a sudden you just give me license as a player to all of a sudden get some other stuff life in my head. I don't know when that adversity will hit me and all of a sudden I start to exaggerate or get out of focus, but this is not proper leadership if you're the coach. We are beyond that. Whether it was a win, whether it was a lose on the field, loss, whether it's a win or a loss in the fight, We're beyond that, coach. Why are you still woofing?
I tend to agree with you on that, Whit, and I'll take it a step further. The reality here is he doesn't have a legitimate gripe, and when you look at him coming out and saying and he wants guys held to the same standard, it goes back to you're buying time because of the lack of production that Odell Beckham had, but you're also looking at it from the standpoint of you're trying to win over the loyalty, the buy-in, the love, the reverence. Like, he got our back, dog. Like, we could go to war with this dude. He came out and he defended us in the media. And I think that sometimes those things can work out for you, but sometimes those things can backfire on you in a very, very, very bad way. We got to wait to see how that plays out.
We're going to give Freddie Kitchens our first Juicy Smollett Award. We're going to put him in the same boat as Juicy Smollett. Fake crime here. The WWE moving truck has spent the past 2 weeks driving across America. Jeff Gordon kicked it off in Charlotte, and it stopped in 16 cities across the country, including the Vikings game last weekend. Friday, it will arrive in L.A. for the huge premiere a Friday night SmackDown on a Fox. All right, we already knew Friday had a star-studded lineup featuring Hulk Hogan and more. But the big announcement from yesterday is that Dwayne The Rock Johnson will also be there. Can't wait for that. All right, our friend Chris Haynes is here. Let's talk some NBA. Haven't done this in a while. Where LeBron James and Anthony Davis will be looking to turn things around for the Lakers this season. The pair showed up at the team's recent media day, and LeBron had some pointed comments about how they plan to use their newest weapon.
If we're not playing through Anthony Davis while he's on the floor, then it makes no sense to have him on the floor. It's exciting to have such a beautiful young mind, a beautiful player, but also a great leader as well. And it doesn't mean like every time down, you know, we throw it to him and throw it to him and throw it to him, but we have the ability to do that, and he's been very efficient in his career. He commands double teams, and when you're able to attract two, you know, defenders on one guy, then you have the numbers game. Now you got a 4-on-3 on the backside, so it opens up for, you know, for other guys on the floor, including myself.
Let me just say this first and foremost. LeBron's hair, my God, it is back on point to start the season.
I'm not going to let you say
it. Holy cow, that looks awesome. All right. Whatever he paid for that, it was well worth it. Money well spent.
That'd be $8.
That's all. That's all.
Are you buying LeBron will take a back seat to AD?
Oh, man. You know what? Since my man Doc, this has been around in the building with all these guys one-on-one, I want to defer to you. It's been a lot of conversation about Lakerland and how they're going to go down. What you thinking?
So I'm the one asked him that question to get that response. And the reason I asked, because I wanted to know the answer as well to what you guys are talking about. I'll say this. Let me go a bit, little background. I was covering LeBron in Cleveland that first year when him and Kyrie paired together. And LeBron insisted that Kyrie was going to be the primary ball handler. Because that's what people wanted to know at that time. Can LeBron play with another primary ball handler that's a point guard? And I remember it was a particular game. I believe it was like in January. Kyrie Irving scored, I think it was 20 points. His game was off. But he had one assist. And I remember players were talking about that in the locker room. Like, dude, he's a point guard. One assist? Like, what? You couldn't find anybody the whole game? After that game, LeBron took over ball handling duties from that point on. So I bring that up to say this. Look, I think it's wise LeBron to lean on a 26-year-old guy in his prime who's a star in this league. But I will say this. Covering this guy and knowing him, if things start to trickle downwards and things aren't going up to par, he doesn't have a problem at all with taking the reins back. But I think he's going to at least give Anthony Davis the shot initially on.
Yeah, I mean, unfortunately, my antennas went up when I heard this, because earlier in the year, there were reports of LeBron being the point guard. Those were quickly refuted.
I reported that.
You reported that? Damn, you do everything.
But I'll say that it was quickly refuted, but the first lineup that's in there right now is LeBron, Avery Bradley in the backcourt. That means LeBron is
LeBron's
the point,
guard.
That, yeah, so
that's what I'm saying. And so now LeBron, who's leaning into L.A. this year compared to last year where he didn't lean into L.A. in terms of how he was embraced L.A., it makes sense for LeBron to say now, hey, we're going to run this through you, bro. The responsibility is on you, young man. Go out there and get it. Meanwhile, LeBron knows that those keys are both of theirs. Like, he's keeping the keys as well as the de facto point guard. So To me, this sounds like a little bit more of what you want to say, not what you want to do. And that's going to be the interesting play when they hit adversity, because the durability of Anthony Davis has always been the one question mark with him. LeBron is up in age. They've already had injuries to Kuzma. They had no Boogie. Come on, man. This is a recipe for disaster if LeBron's
going to Chris is already giggling because...
Because I'm looking at your face, man. Right, well, look,
LeBron's a chess player, man. He is a chess player, and he's always thinking two or three moves ahead in all of his decisions. The unfortunate thing for LeBron, I'm always thinking five or six moves ahead, and that's why I can decipher LeBron. LeBron James is putting it into the record. This is on AD.
Yeah.
We didn't get Kawhi.
Oh.
This is on AD. We're going to go through AD. I'm letting everybody know we're going through. And if it doesn't work out,
the scapegoat.
That guy.
There it is. Mm-hmm. And so to me, this is a great strategy because, again, LeBron's a chess player for football season. We are in football season right now, and we will be until the first week of February. Once the Super Bowl ends, LeBron will come back and be like, now we're going, the spotlight's on me. And basketball, now I'm taking back control because I think he already knows they have a big problem already sitting in the Staples Center in the L.A. Clippers. Mm-hmm. He's got his injury protection or injury or if they lose protection. AD, we ran it through AD. This wasn't my team. He's the star, blah, blah, blah. And so after the Super Bowl, LeBron can, if things aren't going well, which in comparison to the Clippers, I don't think they will be, LeBron can put on his cape and try to save the Lakers. Hey, we tried to go through the young guy, but I'm 35 now, and I have to go put on my cape and
activate again.
Activate. Mm-hmm. And so I just think this is a smart, calculated move by LeBron. Put the ball in AD's hand. It's like lobbing that grenade over here, Marcellus. You hear this grenade?
Right.
I'm gonna run out to the bathroom. Yeah. Let me know if you survive.
It's the quarterback saying, hey, everything goes through our running game. And it's like, but you touch the ball first, dude. Like, you ain't fooling nobody. You got 40 attempts. I get 20 carries. Everything goes through me. You're not slick right there. That's how I read it.
You know what? If LeBron is a couple steps ahead of us and Whitlock, if you five steps ahead of y'all, I'm like 10 steps behind y'all because I didn't see that coming. Like, I didn't see that this was a premeditated plan for LeBron to appoint a scapegoat. I didn't see that, Whitlock.
Well, have you not been watching LeBron for the past 10 years? There's always a scapegoat.
I just looked at it as he's 35. It makes all the sense in the world to make sure your young horse gets the boatload of the work in the regular season and then postseason, things change.
Did you not? LeBron also had, or there have been, did LeBron say it or did people in the media say it for him? That LeBron is about to take vengeance on all his critics. He's about to go in on a higher level than he ever has, blah, blah, blah. So he's saying that. And so if you really think, I've never met an athlete who reached LeBron's level of greatness who said, don't run it through me, run it through somebody else. Kareem Abdul-Jabbar was damn near 62 when he retired. He still wanted it run through him.
Right,
Magic Johnson, Isaiah Thomas, Larry Bird with no back or several back injuries. Joe Namath came out to the L.A. Rams on two bad knees. And he was. I've never seen greatness say, now I've seen it snatched. I've seen LeBron go to Miami and say, Dwayne, I'm sorry. This is mine. This is the only way we can win. But handing it over, that's not what the all-time greats do.
And look, that's why when the roster was constructed as is, and then I heard that he was the point guard, and then that quickly, I mean, they said, do not let that out. I was like, oh, that's a different play for this team. Mm-hmm. It makes no sense when you hear that and then you see this, you're like, how do I reconcile the two? LeBron is saying basically, I got a young guy, and I'm hiding this in plain sight. Mm-hmm. I'm hiding it behind a 26-year-old. And you don't understand that what's going on is last year was a disaster despite LeBron's great numbers, disaster and reception. So now he's like, receive me differently. Mm-hmm. I am not the king. Even though I'm trying to get the Lakers back to where they were, it's not going to be all on me. We're going to share this responsibility because of what happened last year.
But just like you brought the analogy with the quarterback, and you're mentioning that no star player has just given up the reins. LeBron James is still going to be the primary ball handler.
Right.
So it's still going to go through him. He's still going to be he's saying it's going through AD, but he has to be the one to initiate the offense through AD. So he's still very much in charge. It's just the big boy got to get a lot of work done
over
there.
Well, I think it's just in terms of perception.
I get that. That makes sense.
I think it's a perception. He's going to control the ball, but he's created the perception that everything's running through AD. Hey, LeBron said it. And again, if you can just show, I just started thinking about more. Do you think Kobe ever turned it over to anybody? Mm. Tom Brady's 42. He ain't turned it over to nobody. Michael Jordan, this is, I don't want to say it's as bad as this, but it would be like Michael Jordan going to the Wizards. We're going to run this through Kwame Brown.
Yeah. What do you do on Friday? Hey, it's my mic, but it's just like it's both of ours.
Hey, Whit. If you don't pass the baton and allow me and Marcellus to speak, and this segment is a bust, who that segment is going to fall on? The blame is going to be placed on who? Mm. You. Mm. LeBron, the primary distributor. So he's still going to get his bulk of the shared blame if the Lakers do falter.
That's true, but...
You like, man, that, Dodger?
That's true, but, man, LeBron, I'm telling you, he's like a Corleone if you ever watch the Godfather movies. And LeBron loves the Godfather movies. And if you watch the they had control of the media, the Corleone family. Mm. They could get their stories planted whenever they wanted.
I don't know nothing about that one.
And LeBron James has a lot of influence over the media.
It's like, I ain't lose all this weight for you to start hating now. Got that new watch.
I don't know about that.
LeBron. No, did we miss anything?
Yeah, let's stay right here in L.A. where Clippers news edition, Paul George recently said that he believes he and Kawhi Leonard are the best duo in the NBA.
Duh.
Well, my guy, Frank Vogel, has some different thoughts. And when he was asked about LeBron and AD versus every other duo in the league, he responded saying, quote, "We have the best of them. I put those two guys against anybody in the league." I want to ask you guys, do you agree with Vogel?
I do, but just slightly. There's a lot of good duos out here. And LeBron and AD have a chance to be a very good duo, but I would put Kawhi and Paul George just because of the age factor and just because of where the NBA is right now. You got the best two-way players in the league. I give them a slight advantage.
Man, tough to argue this one. A lot of good duos out there, LeBron and AD, and only one great duo, and that's Kawhi and PG, because duo is just short for dual responsibilities. Offense and defense. You got to play both ends. You were going both ways in basketball. And that's why I give the edge to our younger duo, collectively. And we play both sides of the court.
I disagree with you, both of you guys, on this point. There are not a lot of great duos out there. There are good duos.
There's only one good.
There's about three great duos. Yeah. But I'm going to mention the best one. I think it is LeBron James and Anthony Davis. Just from the standpoint, that's an inside-outside threat. And I get your dual threat, offensively.
LeBron defense last year, AD defense
AD told me he's going to get LeBron James up to par defensively. He wants LeBron James to make
an
all-defensive
team. Who's
going to
get AD defensively up to par? LeBron does control the media. Let me stop.
I'm just going to say this.
What?
To me, Kawhi and Paul George, man, that's R. Kelly and Jay-Z, the best of both worlds.
Hold on. Of both worlds, it ain't the best now, though.
I understand that. I understand that. And I understand R. Kelly's problems.
Yeah. Don't let him bring it out the duo.
Let's move to Pittsburgh, where the Steelers got their first win of the year last night, dominating the hapless Bengals 27-3. Mason Rudolph put up his best performance of the year, but the Steelers' defense was the real star, dropping 8 sacks on Cincinnati. Pittsburgh now faces Baltimore on Sunday, and D-lineman Cam Hayward says the Steelers are still in the mix in the AFC North. You know what? I agree with him. Mm. And they can fix everything this Sunday and really be in the hunt. I think that defense got going against, you know, a bad Bengals team. But the Bengals have played good against some decent teams earlier in the year. Bud Dupree got going. T.J. Watt got going. The addition of Minkah Fitzpatrick has been good. And Mason Rudolph looks like, yeah, I think the Steelers are not dead yet. And this AFC North race is going to come down to the wire, and they're going to be in the mix.
Yeah, they're not dead, but I'm not – going to go as far as saying they're in the mix. I think that they're tier two in this division. I've been on a 1-3 team before, and we end up winning 10 games and found ourselves in the playoffs. So I understand mathematically they're still in it. But that game plan is not sustainable. I don't see that working against Baltimore twice, Cleveland. It was a lot of heavy edge, misdirection, respect, a little cuter than I like, shovel passes, wildcat, things that just get Rudolph comfortable. I get it. And barely a shot here down the field, but he did make the big throw for a touchdown. That said, you got 8 sacks defensively. That's not happening every single week. So a lot of calculations that worked in this moment, in this game, against a lowly Cincinnati Bengals team. But against the other two teams in the division that you need to beat, Baltimore, Cleveland, I don't see it.
They are a threat, and they're always going to be a threat as long as they're in the AFC North until something redefines itself in that part of the NFL. And the reason being is that they've been the big brother for so long. And the only way that we can throw out all the stats and all of these things because of the familiarity between a Ravens team and a Steelers team. You can look at a team that's a Super Bowl caliber team to a team that won't even make the playoffs, and you'll still see somebody get punched in the mouth that you didn't expect or anticipate in that type of game. This is very much that type of division. So when you look at Cleveland, you know, Cleveland has finished second one time since Mike Tomlin's career started, his tenure started in Pittsburgh. One time, you know, that's damning information if you ask me. You can't sit there and place Cleveland at the upper echelon, so the cream de la creme for this NFC North or AFC North. It has to be taken. So I don't put Cleveland at the top of this division. It's going to come down to what happens between Baltimore and Pittsburgh. So they are indeed a threat.
We just saw this a year ago, and it doesn't happen a lot. The Houston Texans started 1-3 and won their division, the AFC South. I think I'm looking at stats here that since the playoffs expanded in 1990, there have been 208 teams start 1-3. Of those, 14% have made the playoffs, 8% have won their division. I just look at what Pittsburgh believes. When you go out and trade for Minkah Fitzpatrick, when you go out and trade for a tight end, they believe they can win this division. And they have reason. They've been the class of the NFL and of that division for decades. And so they believe they can do it. And Mike Tomlin, very experienced coach, had a lot of success. If I'm looking at Jacksonville with Gardner Minshew figure things out, a rookie quarterback from out of nowhere. This Mason Rudolph is a guy they've drafted and had in their organization. They believe in him. I think they have a real shot here. And I agree with LeVar. The competition isn't so outstanding. They're not facing the Chiefs in their division. They're not facing the Patriots. They're facing, you know, people that they feel very confident they can get with.
And I think that's going to be the fool's gold because they see this relative experience. Oh, the competition not that far ahead. Let's go chase it. Really basing that on the culture. Respect to Mike Tomlin because Mike Tomlin has not had a losing season as a coach for the Pittsburgh Steelers. But when you start saying, how has that enforced that culture? Those B's, those triple B's are gone. All three of the B's are gone. And now you're going out there saying, okay, we're going to redefine what our culture is with different guys because our competition is not as great. But then I look at you, forget competition, just what you're doing offensively, especially 30th and third down percentage, 29th in offense and run offense. So a night where you have 8 sacks is not the night to just run away with your hope. I just think that this is going to get put to a halt when they go against those other two
teams. I'll disagree in saying that they're not going to try to redefine the culture of the Pittsburgh Steelers team. They are going to try to redevelop and redefine what this team is going to be able to do personnel-wise. Mm-hmm. The culture of the Pittsburgh Steelers was established with Chuck Knoll and Mean Joe Green and L.C. Greenwood and Dwight White. The essence of what this franchise represents is still there. So we've seen it happen. Now, it hasn't happened in Tomlin's tenure But we'll see if this holds true. But you've seen it happen when Chuck Noll had to make it through with the Neil O'Donnells and with the Bubby Bristers and the Mark Malones. You've seen this team have to find it in other ways, through the running game, through the defense. The culture is what carried them through and continued to have them as a competitor. So we'll have to wait and see, but I still don't give away the AFC North based upon them not having Ben Roethlisberger or not having the Triple Bs.
Hey, college football fans, Joel Klatt here. And over on my podcast, The Joel Klatt Show, we discuss the best teams, players, and storylines in all of college football. Any questions? Then send them in to the Joel Klatt Show mailbag, and I'll answer them. Tap the banner to follow The Joel Klatt Show on Spotify.
Uncle Jimmy's here to help us talk about our approval rating for Sean McVay. But first,
You know.
That this ain't no Uncle Jimmy. That's what you know.
Well, give out the big dummy of the day, and it better not be me.
Well, I tell you what, big dummy of the day.
It's coming.
Go to somebody to say that we only talking about Christian McCaffrey because he white.
He didn't say
we ain't talking about him because he white. We talking about him because he a McCaffrey. That mean he a bad boy. Dummy.
Let's talk some Sean McVay.
Nah.
Who got embarrassed Sunday with the Rams giving up 55 points and a loss to the Bucs. L.A. now faces off with division rival Seattle on Thursday Night Football right here on Fox. Marcellus, you think the Rams bounce back this week?
I don't. No doctor says the prescription is going up to Seattle and getting a win. That's not how you bounce back. Russell Wilson is acting up. Right now on pace to have his best passer rating in history. So I think that they come back. Ooh, the Rams, 3-2. I think it's going to happen.
I totally agree with you. I think this is the wrong opponent.
Right.
I think Russell Wilson's balling out of control, trying to put together an MVP season.
Yeah.
I agree with you, Uncle Jimmy. Does Sean McVay bounce? Oh, I'm sorry. Uncle LeDon James.
Oh, that's all right.
Whoever you are.
See, first of all, I'm going to tell you, your question is a question for Uncle Jimmy.
Yeah, it really is.
But right now, this is Uncle LeDon. I strongly suggest you learn your colors. And once again, you disrespected my nephew, the King.
The King.
King James.
How?
And what? All praises be. Get it right. Hey, man, how dare you go an entire show and not mention the celebrations and the accolades of my nephew? He got the mayor of California to pass legislation
the mayor
declaring war on the NCAA nation.
The governor.
Huh? I'm going to say it again. He got the mayor to declare legislation on the NCAA nation.
You talking about the fair...
The man, look here, let me explain it to you.
Yeah.
The man came into the shop, just came and sat up there to chill, you know, came in to get his drink on. You know, he came to get a little trim. You know, he knocked off a little bit on the side, you know what I'm saying?
Yeah,
we get it.
Hey, man,
it,
my nephew got him to sign this little bill, man. Had him sign it in front of everybody. See, he about to get all these little young Thundercats in college the payday that they deserve. They call it the Fair Pay to Player Act. I've been a big advocate of this bill since 67, let me tell you.
The Fair...
And he signed it right in the Fair Play to Player Act.
He signed it in the shop
just for you.
For me.
Look. He knew your little goofy ass was going to try to find a way to say it was a fugazi. You know, I told him. I said, hey, man, here's what you do. Sign that bitch on camera. Sign it in front of everybody. You know, my nephew, he's nice. He got three words to describe you. Play a hater. And you know what we say? You know it's real bad when they put the ER at the end of that month. See?
Real.
You understand what I'm saying?
Look, man.
See, that's why you didn't talk about my nephew.
No, I'm going to get to that tomorrow.
You know, you know why? Because you're a born-again hater.
I didn't have time today to get to that, but trust me, I will be talking
about... All you done talk about is him doing too much on the court, him doing too much as a father.
Yeah.
You criticizing him because he of his knowledge of old classic remakes, Space Jam, Soul Plane.
Yeah.
I'm going to get to that tomorrow. I'm going to address...
Hey, man, you're a hater.
I'm going to get to it tomorrow. Today, we're talking Sean McVay. And my approval rating
they
for Sean
McVay.
They put
the ER end of it on you.
Has actually gone up.
Going up after a loss? Mm.
Well, the last time we did him, I had him rated a little low. Mm. He hadn't made it to the Super Bowl. So I raised his all-time greatness. He hadn't got three or four coaches hired. Dropped his drive performance to 19. Wow. I got him a 69. Rob Gronkowski loves that role play.
You're stupid. I had to drop him, obviously, because of the loss, but the character, something going on with Todd Gurley. You're not telling me in authenticity. You ain't got to lie to us about what's going on with this offense. And lying to people talking about you're not a good coach. Come on, coach.
All right. Great. Twitter has him at an all-star level.
You ain't got to lie to kick it, Craig.
Hey, college football fans, Joel Klatt here. And over on my podcast, The Joel Klatt Show, we discuss the best teams, players, and storylines in all of college football. Any questions? Then send them in to The Joel Klatt Show mailbag, and I'll answer them. Tap the banner to follow The Joel Klatt Show on Spotify.